Blog Talk Radio.
Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the
South, the paranormal outlaw, and I don't know if Jody's with me or not. I can't see the studio board.
Ten six niner, we got whores on the city. We need backup now.
You're listening to Terrify Radio, the best damn paranormal show on the net.
We're there, dude.
All right. Well, yeah, my internet's kind of messing up tonight. I pressed that button like 3 minutes ago, and it just now clicked in. So I guess I'm on air by myself. I'm running blind right now. I don't know where Jody is at. I'm going to send her a text right now. All right. Yeah, so this is great. Live radio. As I'm trying to get the internet going here, let me see if I can get a song playing while I try to get my self situated here. So everybody just hang tight. Let's see if I can get this to respond at least enough to play a song just to get by here. Let's see.
Hold on to me as we go, as we roll down this unfamiliar road. And although this wave is stringing us along, just know you're not alone. I'm gonna make this place your home. Settle down, it'll all be clear. Don't pay no mind to the demons, they fill you with fear. The trouble, it might drag you down.
Full-time job right in itself.
Right?
You know? Nothing on top of other things. Makes one busy.
Right?
Oh, snappity daff. Yep.
Oh, man. Oh.
How have you been?
The same. Just been working. I got a bass tournament this weekend on Easter weekend. Yeah. So.
God, I keep forgetting it's Easter.
Yeah.
I'm reminded that it's Easter this weekend, but it's like it hasn't processed. It hasn't hit yet. Even though I've already been shopping and, you know, got the kids stuff, I bought them two. I bought all my little ones new fishing poles.
Uh-huh.
So that I can take them fishing and catch some fishies. Yeah. You know me, I like fishing.
Yeah, I started fishing, I believe, when I was 4 or 5 years old. So that got me involved in that. I think I won it. Yeah, I won a little bass tournament on a city pond. Won a first place and got a brand new tackle box.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't fish much as a kid. I picked it up about 7 years ago on my own. I started it with shark fishing. And then, I don't know, my brother found out I was doing that. He's like, what the hell, why don't you come bass fishing with me? I'm like, okay. And there was one time we freaking went out. He had these little boats. He had, like, this beautiful house and there's this lake down there. It's just out in the middle, you know, out in the county, and beautiful. And take his little boat, and we went under this tree, and I got tick bites all over my body. I walk into, on the way home, like, I'm itching all over, right?
Yeah.
And I stop at Quick Trip to grab some soda, and I go in and I look down on my arms, and I've got ticks all over me. I'm like, and they were all over my freaking ass leg area. Oh, it was so bad. Like, I had to have them tweezed off, okay? And I had to go to the doctor. Because I had bites everywhere. It was so bad. But the things you do for fishing, you know?
Exactly. I know, right?
Yeah, I'd do it again. If it happens, it happens. It's like shit, you know? It's like going out in the woods.
Yeah.
But I like outdoorsy stuff. So, you know, like I do whitewater rafting in the summertime. I go once usually a year. I love that. That is badass. It's a good day to die when you're doing that shit.
Really? Right?
It's dangerous. It's not even to be messed with. And I'm a psychopath. It's like, you know what? It's my one time a year that I go, fuck it. I might die this weekend. And if I die, at least I died doing something fun. You know?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Gotta have fun. Never once in a while, just do something crazy.
Oh, if I can get this freaking board back up. I tried to refresh, and now I got a white screen. You got to love technology.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I saw on the news earlier, Putin and Russia and the Ukraine are about to go to civil war.
Holy fuck. Are you serious?
Yep.
Russia?
Russia is about to invade the Ukraine, he said. He's got about 40,000 troops on the border right now.
Oh, no. This is not good. You know, we need to find somebody that to come on and talk about, like, I would love to find somebody who's very knowledgeable about Albert Pike. Have you ever heard about Albert Pike? Albert Pike. Some claim he's a genius. He actually has a statue at the White House. And he's a Freemason. And he wrote out the three wars and how it is to be laid out and what is going to happen with it. And it is freaky that it literally has already happened like that.
Mm-hmm.
Albert Pike. And the third one is coming up, and I believe it involves the Russians. He was an American attorney who was alive 1802 to 1891. Confederate officer, a writer, and a Freemason. And he was also the person who ran Ku Klux Klan. And, you know, his whole thing was he wrote out a prediction and how three wars are going to be played out. And the first two were accurate. And the third one is yet to come. But it involves the Russians. Yeah, it's creepy when you start researching the Freemasons and this Albert Pike guy. It's really scary. And then you link it to this house that a Freemason, his name is Stephen Huff, built here in Missouri. And it has, my brother was inside it, and it is just like all Freemason stuff on the inside, but it is built to withstand a an atomic blast, like one of the worst tornadoes. It's bulletproof, but it's like layered in concrete, then this foam, then another layer of concrete, then this foam, and then like another layer of concrete. This thing is like solid, tight. But they say that, you know, it has an underground city that they're building, and they've been building an underground city that goes to Springfield, Missouri, which is, I would say, about 35 minutes to an hour away from the location where this house is. And they say that it links up to Washington, D.C., as well as to the Denver airport.
Yeah.
Freemasons freak me out, man. You want to talk some crazy shit? Let's talk that. I ain't shitting you, man.
That's what I'm saying. We need to have a show just talking about Freemasons.
I've studied them very well, clearly. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I'm not talking about, but I literally could write a book about the research on them that I've done, because I've gone into a lot of Freemason temples, and I've investigated. I made friends with Freemasons and get their stories and stuff. So I have a lot of stories about, you know, just what it's like for them.
Oh, yeah.
Certain things. But they freaked me out, no doubt. I think that there's human evil.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely within the secret society stuff. Not necessarily the Freemasons. Like, I mean, there's Golden Bones, and, you know, we've been all hearing new rumors forever about this stuff. And I believe a lot of it to be true.
Right.
Politics is a nasty thing. And a lot of these people are in politics that are, you know, in these secret societies. Motherfuckers, that's all I'm saying. As I chomp on my chili from Steak and Shake.
Do we have anybody in the deal? Because I can't see anything.
Oh, I don't know. Let me go. I need to log in. I've been sitting here chomping, baby.
I know.
I'm hungry. I'm gonna eat. And earlier,
right?
I never eat, but God damn it. This woman is hungry. It's going to take me a second.
Oh,
ah, you know, I want to go, I was thinking about it earlier, I want to go Bigfoot hunting so bad. Really do.
I know.
Yeah.
It'd be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yep. If somebody doesn't take me soon, I'm going to build my own freaking team with my brother and some guys here from St. Louis and be like, motherfuckers, you all are taking me Bigfoot hunting. I'll be like, bitch, have you lost your mind? Hell yeah. That's why y'all are coming with me. You know what? I hate to say this on air, but I don't know where else to say it. Are you on Facebook at all? On Facebook.
I'm not on anything right now. The internet is down over here.
Well, then you need to text me the login password because you changed it and I forgot.
All right.
I did not write it down, so I'll wait for your text.
It's a bloody mess, I tell you.
And we are in. We do have two people on hold. So
yeah, that's right. Yes. See if I can get it up real quick. Hang on a second. Our guest, which I had a bio, which is on our show page, which I can't see, Jennifer Woodward, she's the founder of Haunt Paranormal Team, and her daughter is co-founder, Adrian, and they're going to come on tonight and chat with us.
Wonderful. All right, I'm going to let him in.
All righty.
Uh-oh, one of them dropped. Weird. Okay. Oh, damn. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, how are you?
Just fine. How are you?
Good.
This is Jennifer, and
this is Adrian.
Hi, Adrian.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing good. I think we're kind of, like, a little retarded tonight, but...
yeah, I'm having internet issues on my end, so I couldn't read your bio. So you guys will have to kind of... tell everybody about yourselves and how you got involved in paranormal. I guess, Jennifer, you could start.
Okay. I've been interested in the paranormal since I was a little girl. When I was like 2 or 3 years old, I kept seeing blood in the floor in the bathroom, and I'd come get my grandmother and bring her in there, and it would be gone. So when I was about 4 or 5 years old, it looked like somebody had drew with my sidewalk chalk in the blood. And I went and got my grandmother. Of course, when we got back, it was gone again. But then she knew I was really seeing something. And so she ended up having to tell me that the bathroom used to be my great Uncle Earl's bedroom, and that's where he killed himself. And so from then on, I was interested in strange things. There was a set of red eyes came out of the basement and stood at the foot of the bed. And, you know, I just stood up in the bed and said, "What do you want?" And, of course, my grandmother comes running wanting to know who I'm talking to. And I said, "The man with the red eyes." So from then on, you know, I've just been interested. I started investigating more and more, and then it got to where it was like an every weekend thing. And then after I grew up and had kids, then I dragged Adrian right along with me, and I'll let her tell you how she got started.
Hello?
Hey.
Hello. I'm sorry. Hey. Okay. I started pretty much the same way. When I was 9 years old, I started seeing like random shadows of things in the house, you know, and usually it would scare other people, but I was just intrigued by it. But my grandparents had always been real religious, but we never talked about ghosts or anything like that around them. So I had always had the idea, you know, well, it's bad, don't talk about it. So I started secretly looking up stuff, like, on the internet and finding books and stuff like that. And one day, Mom found it up on the internet. She started talking to me about it, you know, and so it was natural because she was, you know, had seen stuff. And I remember one night, I heard somebody in the kitchen moving around, and I hollered for Mom, and she never answered me. And then I looked over to my door, and my door opened, and there was a shadow standing there. And it just kind of leaned up against the wall and sat there staring at me. And I just stared at it, and eventually it just dispersed, you know, into thin air. And ever since then, I was like, you know, you got to take me on a ghost hunt. You got to take me on a ghost hunt. And so when I was 9 years old, I was actually going on investigations with Mom. Of course, I was still pretty much a chicken at that time. I didn't like getting out of the car. I wanted to stay in the car to investigate. I didn't want to get out of the car to investigate. But by the time I was, it took about 2 years, but by the time I was 11 years old, I could fully lead an investigation pretty much without even thinking twice about, you know, what I was doing or anything like that. And then we founded the team in 2005, and by then we had became certified, which of course only means anything if you're trying to do home investigations or anything like that. And we had a couple of classes, you know, where they give out certificates that you completed a class. Like we took some classes on demonology and like ghostology and different things like that. And then about 2 years after we established the team, we had about 100 investigations under our belt and about 10 really good ones, like larger places. And we actually got invited to the Ryan Center to do some EVP research alongside them. And so, you know, that's kind of how we got to what we were today. You know, after we went to the Ryan Center, everything went from being a hobby to being more of research, you know, wanting to learn more and try to kind of compare with everybody else, you know, what is out there.
So how old are you now?
I'm
20. You're 20?
22.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's a long time to be doing it. That's great. I started bringing, I actually got into it because of my son seeing since he was three. But, yeah, by the time he was like 11, it was just so bad that I started taking him so that he could learn that, like, he had abilities and it was okay, you know. I don't think there's anything wrong with children doing it, especially if they are of the knowing. I think that a parent should allow them to understand it and work with it, because children are going to have more questions, and they may go off and do it by themselves with their friends, and it could be a disaster, you know?
Right. I took her to places that I knew were safe because I'd already been there. when she was first learning.
Yeah.
And then after, you know, the more she went, the more she was just like me, the more she got into their blood. And we just had to keep going.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So where are you guys exactly from?
Bristol, Virginia.
So what's your favorite place that you guys go to? Where's your stomping ground, I guess?
My favorite is the Rectory in Sedansville, Ohio. Oh, you mean locally?
Well, no, I mean, you know, locally or wherever you guys have been, like, you know, where's your favorite place that you guys love to go to?
Oh, I need to tell you also, there's a couple of our other team members that are sitting in with us. Shannon and Travis are here, too. They're sitting in. But anyway, the Sedansville Rectory is my favorite. What's your favorite?
I would say that St. Albans is probably my favorite.
I like St. Albans, too. And Major Grimm's Mansion is pretty awesome, too.
Yeah. Locally, I like the Robert Wood Mansion in Kingsport, Tennessee. And we actually are the home team for a place in Narrows, Virginia, which is only like 2 hours from here, called the MacArthur Inn. And if you go to our website, we call awesome EVP on there. And there's actually a funny story to it. We went in, they called us, and we went up to the inn, and they had no guests that night, so the entire inn was kind of like ours to, you know, investigate. And we were looking at pictures because it used to be a nursing home. We were looking at pictures of people in the nursing home. Well, the three co-founders, or the three founders, my mom and then myself and then Ashley, we were all trying to work on our abilities. So we start looking at separate photos. Well,
at separate tables, so we wouldn't see what the other ones were looking at.
Yeah, so we were supposed to be pulling out pictures that we felt, you know, connected to. Well, we all put out a picture of a female, and the female was exactly the same, even though we were all at three. It's three separate different tables. And on the back of one of the pictures, it's Agnes. And so we split up into groups. We each lead our own team when we do an investigation. So on my team, I had Shannon and Anthony and Travis. And we were on my team of four was on the bottom floor. And then mom had her team on the top floor. Well, the walkie-talkie started making awful noises. And so I'm walkie-talkie over to them, and I'm like, what are you all doing? And she was like, we're not doing nothing. I was like, did you not hear that noise? And she was like, no. So we do have it on the voice recorder, like the walkie-talkie just randomly going crazy. But, of course, I thought, well, maybe it's interfering with the radio frequency or something. So I shut the walkie-talkie off. Well, we continue with the investigation, and I'm like, Agnes, if you're here, you know, please give me a sign of your presence. And you can hear, like, a walker, you know, dragging the floor, coming down the hallway.
And that was
coming from upstairs.
So she was downstairs.
I turned the walkie-talkie back on, and I'm like, what are you all moving up there? You know, I'm trying to do an EVP session. And she's like, well, we have already went outside. You know, we're getting ready to go to the basement. We're not even inside no more. And I'm like, okay. So we take off running upstairs. You know, there's nobody upstairs, nowhere. We come back downstairs. And I'm like, Agnes, you know, if that was you, I need you to communicate with me. And on the voice recorder, we got back like an older man, like a real struggling voice, and he's like, Agnes is in the kitchen. And so it like actually responded back to us and even acknowledged the spirit by name, just how we were all drawn to her picture.
And we also found out that Tom was her husband, wasn't it? Was his name Tom? And they had given a Last Supper painting to the it was an old folks home at that time when they were there. But when we went, it was an inn. And that painting was still there. So we thought they might have been attached to the painting, but we didn't get anything where the painting was.
That's cool.
That's
amazing. Now, I know that you guys – you have a large team, 13. I actually, for almost 3 years, I had a team of 14. So it's kind of hard to manage. So how do y'all, does everybody get to go on, you know, I guess it depends on the size of the location on who goes?
Yes, it depends on the size. But I've recently came up with a way that most of us can go. So
we have a
big haunt van, and then we've got the CDR system. So we're going to make our headquarters inside the van, and, you know, at least two people, you know, we'll be able to take two extra people because they'll be able to do a headquarters in the van. And that way we can have our DVR system in there, and they can have their walkie-talkies, and, you know, we can rotate around, and they can, you know, if they see anything, they can tell us, you know, or whatever. That way, you know, it's infrared, and so, you know, if they see anything, like at the MacArthur Inn one time, that's how we caught the apparition that we caught, is because somebody saw it from the camera and told us where it was, and we started snapping pictures and actually caught it.
Right. Yeah, one thing that I did, because since then my team's down to four. We're just kind of laying low now because we were so freaking busy. We just, you know, it just burned us out after 3 years as far as, you know, now we're just kind of taking it slow. But one thing I did with my DVR, since I had such a large team, was I bought some fairly cheap microphones you could slide in. It depended on what kind of cameras you had, but mine had like covers on them. So I kind of slid my microphone in beside the camera itself, and I ran sound back to where the DVR scan the screen was, and I had live audio going, and I had a little switch box where I could switch to whatever mic, whatever room I wanted to listen to. So I had one person listening to live audio in rooms where the investigators were not at. So if something was going on, you know, he was hearing activity, he'd radio, you know, one of the teams to go check out the room where he's hearing all this noise coming from. So
that's awesome.
That's what I, yeah.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, it helps when you got one watching the screen and you got one listening to live audio, because a lot of times the DVR won't pick up things, you know, and you're getting, you know, footsteps and rustling and different things, or a door opening, you know, sound of a door opening, and you're like, you don't see anything on the screen itself, and you're like, okay, something's going on in that room. So, because we found out with the DVR, sometimes it seems like the spirits themselves are aware of the cameras. And they kind of duck and dodge around those cameras. I know one location we went to, we were there for 12 hours, and we came and we caught a full-body apparition on the screen. But when we left the location, and this is a brand-new DVR, I left the location, came home, we only had 40 seconds of actual video, and it was recording the whole time. Somehow the memory got erased between the time we left and the time we got home.
At the Tutwiler Hotel, we had a full-bodied apparition that was really interested in our camcorder. We got invited to the Tutwiler. It's in Alabama. Birmingham, Alabama. And they had left a whole floor that was supposed to be haunted free for us for that night. And then they put us in the room that was supposed to be haunted. So while we were investigating the rest of the hotel, we left a video camera going in the room. Well, we had all gone, you know, nobody was on the floor. And see, they had cameras outside, so you could see the hallway and stuff. So I would have known if anybody came in, because I went down and looked on their cameras to make sure nobody had been on that floor while we were gone. And this thing comes out of the wall, and it, like, starts manifesting. And then it's just like a shadow man. And he comes over, and he stands in front of the camera, and he bends down and looks at it, and then he raises back up, and he bends down and looks at it again. And he does that like 3 or 4 times. And, I mean, you can see through him on it. And then you hear us coming down the hall, like, what is it, 30 seconds later? You hear us coming down the hall, and then you watch him back. As I come through the door, he backs into the wall and disappears. It's pretty awesome.
About them being not wanting to be on camera and stuff, we actually just had a home investigation in Chilhowee, Virginia, and I'm head of EVP, so I had like 3 voice reporters going at one time in separate places of the house. One of them I actually done the initial meeting on, the initial interview on, and so I had it with me the whole time, and it was on completely the whole time. And I carried it around, you know, so I, of course, kept checking the light, kept watching the time, stuff like that. When we get home to do the evidence review, and you hear me doing the initial investigation and everything, and I mean, interviewing, about halfway through the interview, something cuts it off. I mean, the time's still going, but there's no sound coming into the voice recorders. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to check the other two. So I got to check the other two, and the same thing happened. So, like, they start out, you know, you hear me talking about where I'm setting the voice recorder and what time it is and all that. I lay it down. You hear, you know, the natural sounds of the environment and stuff, and you hear us in the other room, you know, talking and stuff, and then it just cuts out. And one of them completely shut off and didn't even save. Like, usually when you accidentally shut them off, they'll automatically save. You know, you don't lose anything because it saved itself. Well, it didn't have anything, and it was just really weird.
That's like at the Star Museum last time we did the Star Museum. It kept turning my video camera off. I got back, I thought I had like 8 or 10 of the videos. When we got back, they were all blank. You would see, you know, it start out, and you'd see me, you know, change the tape and stuff. And then when you put it in, it's gone. I mean, nothing.
Right. Yeah, and one cool thing I'm reading about y'all, and I was telling Jennifer, my team, we're here in Texas and East Texas, so we decided to take a nice long road trip, and it was a 14-hour drive, but we drove all the way over to Old South Pittsburgh Hospital and stayed the weekend there, and I know you guys have been there as well. I know when we got there, it wasn't 20 minutes. We got there about 11 o'clock. They let us in early. We got there about 11 o'clock Saturday morning, and they were walking us back, you know, to that back wing back there where, you know, the rooms are for everybody to sleep. And so we were carrying equipment back there, and, you know, there's that nurse's station right there. And to the left is another hallway. Well, there's a door to, like, a room right there. And one of the guys, he's really strong, medium. He can see, feel, hear. He's got all the ability. So he saw a spirit walk through that door into that room. And then he was like, that was kind of interesting. So he kind of goes down, you know, where he's going to stay. And I didn't know it at the time that he had saw it. And then me and another guy were walking down, and the door was shut. And when he saw it, well, apparently it opened back up, because when we walked up on it, the door was open. And we were walking, and we look, and this door starts closing. And it closes all the way up, and you hear it lock itself. I was like, what the hell? Who's in there? And we go up, and we try to turn the doorknob, and it's locked. And then he comes back down, and he goes, what are y'all looking at? And I said, well, that door just shut itself and locked from the inside. He goes, really? I saw a spirit go through that door. He said the door was shut when I saw it. I said, well, it was open when we walked down here, and I said we watched it shut itself and lock from the inside. And that, you know, we're not even investigating it. We're just getting there. and stuff's going on, you know. And then we decided when we were investigating, we go down in the basement area, or, you know, where the janitor, the maintenance guy's got, you know, there's keys and stuff down there. Well, there's a table there with two sets of keys, and we heard, you know, don't mess with his stuff. It aggravates him. Well, don't tell us not to do that, because we're going to find out if that's true or not. So we grabbed a pair of those keys. Yeah, we grabbed a pair of those keys, and we threw it on the floor, and then we walked out of the room to see what happened. Well, we came back about an hour later, and the keys we threw on the floor were still there, but there was a third set of keys on the table. And no one had been down there.
That's pretty awesome. We had several things happen at the old South Pittsburgh Hospital. When Pat and I were there, she's one of our sister teams, but she and I were there doing the story, and we had the whole place to ourselves, just the two of us. And when we went in our room that night, she was on her side of the room, and I was on my side of the room, and I just laid down on the bed, and she just sat on her. She hadn't laid down yet. And we were talking, and then a disembodied voice just spoke right over top of us. And I looked up, and I said, that wasn't me. She said, it wasn't me either. I knew it wasn't, because it wasn't either one of our voices. But I was sitting there thinking, damn, I wish I had, you know, set it up, or we could have recorded that.
When we the first time we ever went, it was Ashley and I had to leave because Mom had, I think she was at a convention or something, and she didn't get to go with us. But we got the whole weekend to ourselves and settled with Stephen Hill. He was actually doing a radio show. PKN was big and everything. We were there to do the radio show with him. So we got to stay from Friday till Sunday. And just before they put the beds and everything in there, you had to bring your sleeping bag. You know, they didn't have no wall you could sign or nothing back then. That was when they were first, you know, really trying to get out there and being haunted. And so, of course, we come in, you know, not knowing a lot about the place. Nobody really had any personal experience besides what people had seen on the website and stuff. And one of the things was on the floor where the nursery and stuff is, they were supposed to have that little boy that the ball and stuff, you know. Well, we had built a tricycle, and we took that tricycle up there, and we left it for him. Well, like I said, the only people there were my team, and we had two different, we had like 12 people with us. We had six people in each room. We had two rooms. And then Stephen Hill and his crew, you know, they were in the room right next to us. We kept hearing this weird noise, like, on the floor above us. So we get up, you know, it was about 5 o'clock in the morning because we had just laid down after investigating. And we tried to go up there and take a look at it. Well, we had left the tricycle at one end of that hallway. And when we were coming up the steps, the tricycle was right in front of the steps, the very top. Like something removed it, but there was nobody awake. Like Cindy and everybody that was there, you know, that had let us in, they had already left. So I knew that nobody was in the building with us. It was weird.
Yeah. Pardon my French, but the asshole spirit that's on the third floor, he decided to get really riled up while we were there, and he started messing with all the females on our team and started, you know, pulling their hair, just giving them that really sick feeling, you know, where hair would start coming over and they'd have to leave the floor. I think he just got kind of stirred up. And Jeff and I, we do a Sunday show, we actually did a special broadcast that Saturday night on the third floor. And, he was doing all kinds of stuff while we were trying to do the radio show. And, he wasn't a happy camper that night. We weren't provoking him or not, but when he started messing with my team, that's when I have to step in and say, dude, what the hell are you doing? You know, I get a little bit more aggressive when a spirit is trying to chase my team off or trying to scare them or whatever it might be. So, yeah, I went up there and had a little chat with the boy, and he wasn't too happy. You could just feel the energy shift the more I talked to it. And, yeah, we got a lot of great EVPs from that place. So it lived up to its reputation, I will say. You know, it was worth the 14 hours that we endured driving there. What kind of, are you guys, do you use a spirit box?
Yes. We had like the ones that we made ourselves, the Frank's box that we made ourselves, and then we recently purchased one of the newer ones, and we're working with it, getting used to the feeling of it and everything. We like the Ovilus. We have an original Ovilus one. And when we were one of the first teams to get it. We was one of the teams that got to do the testing with it to see if they were going to continue it or whatever. And so when we first got it, we weren't really sure how we felt about it until we were out in the graveyard one night, and it kept saying, leave authority, didn't it? We couldn't get it to say nothing else. So we thought, well, we better listen to it. So we got in the van and left. And this was one night that normally I call and tell them we're going to be there. But that night I hadn't. And so when we were pulling out, the police were pulling in the other end. And we were on the Creeper Trail last summer, and it did the same thing. And I don't know if you know what the Creeper Trail is, but it's just like a little trail where you walk on. And, you know, you can ride horses and stuff on it. And we thought it was crazy because it kept telling us authorities was coming. Here comes the police car. Sure enough, coming down that little trail. Coming after us because we're not allowed to be out there after dark. So.
Right. Now, when you're dealing with residential cases, because I find out, you know, you guys have been around for a while, so, you know, the one thing that is like a pet peeve of mine when it comes to the paranormal field, especially the newer teams, sometimes they're the fly-by-night teams. They're there 1 minute, and then they're shut down the next, you know. But you have all these teams out there that they're watching television and they're like, hey, I want to do this, you know, I want to be a ghost hunter. And, you know, I try to strongly advise to the new teams, you know, if I ever come across one, that, you know, they need to wait a while before they undertake a residential, because, you know, you got to have some knowledge of what you're doing, and how to deal with different situations. And, you know, there's been numerous times we've gotten a call where, unfortunately, some team had gone into a person's home, made the situation worse, and then just left the clients high and dry. And so now things are worse, and we have to go in there and clean up the mess, per se, you know? Do you guys have that problem, too?
Very frequently. We get those calls like that all the time. Where I also serve as head case manager, I get people, when I do their initial interview, that's one of the first things I ask is, have you had another paranormal team come in? And 9 times out of 10, they have. And, you know, what we always constantly hear is, oh, you know, there's a young group of people, or, well, they came in and then they never called back and we can't get a hold of them. And, like, made me really angry in general that I can remember is we had a house investigation call from St. Paul, and she had let 3 younger guys that had I don't even think they were 18, but they had made this group, you know, and they went in and investigated. Well, first of all, if I see a bunch of young kids, you know, coming in that don't have any older person, then I'm going to be like, well, you know, you're not even over 18, so I probably shouldn't let you in my house. But this lady did, she let them in. You know, they started provoking, and apparently the only piece of equipment they had was a voice recorder. And she said that they stayed at her house, you know, trying to round up the spirit, you know, making show of self, cussing him, you know, calling him names, trying to get him to hit people, hit the wall, and stuff like that. And then they just left, and nobody could get back hold of them. Well, here we come in, you know, and, it, you know, it was pretty stirred up, but it actually ended up just being a relative, and we actually didn't catch a lot of evidence, but we did get a psychic medium to come in with us, because we don't catch a lot of evidence the first time. We bring in a medium the second time to try to better communicate with it. And, you know, after that, thing was completely calm. You know, she was so thankful. She was like, thank you, you know, for getting it fixed. Yeah, plus when we first went in, she told us it was a demon from where they had routed up. So we did a simple cleansing that night, you know, nothing like trying to get rid of it or anything, just to try to put peace in their mind about the house. And then when we came back, you know, when we brought the medium. Well, anyway, we get this smart little message, you know, on our Facebook from them people saying, from the young guys that had a group, saying that they, and like I said, they were only supposed to be like 17 years old. That's how old I think they were. Saying they had this team for 10 years, so they would have had to start the team when they were 7 years old. And that, you know, that we were stepping on their toes by going in after the client, or after them, and taking their client, because apparently the client told them they didn't want them back at their house anymore or whatever. And so, like, it just ticks me off, you know, that people who actually do this for, like, a life hobby, you know, set out to research this their whole life, have a ruined reputation by little punks like that, you know, that just want to go out and have fun or just ride, yeah, and thrill seek. And then that leaves a bad taste in their mouth about all paranormal investigators when all of us aren't like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, and... what really gets me nowadays, and Jody and I talk about this a lot on the show, is people, you know, nowadays when you watch movies, television, it's all about the demonic. It's all about, you know, the evil stuff. Yeah, I get it, because you're trying to scare people. You're trying to get ratings. You know, you're trying to get people to go watch the movie. But then you get these teams that have very little experience in just dealing with spirits, let alone knowing anything about the demonic world. And they go in and, you know, things are going pretty crazy in the house. And then they go, well, you got a demon in your house. Well, if you don't know for sure, You can't tell a client that, because now their fear factor has skyrocketed. So if there isn't a demonic there, even the spirits that are there with the fear cage that you've created, they have more energy. They can do more things. And they're like, oh, they're even more scared now. This is going to be fun, you know. And if there is a demonic there, you've opened them up even more to more affliction, more demonic oppression, attacks, you know. So, and if there isn't a demonic there and there's nothing there and you keep throwing that word around loosely, it's a form of invitation, and you're going to get what you ask for is what you're going to receive, and you're going to have something like that in the house. So, you know, they don't understand that. And I don't know what is in the water here in Texas, in the area I am, but nine times out of ten, when I get a call, it's something bad. Either it's a malevolent spirit, a human spirit, or it's a demonic. And it's because I guess people down here decide in their spare time they want to dabble in stuff, whether it's witchcraft or they get a 12-pack of beer and decide to play with a Ouija board. But, you know, and we've had some real – I told Jody, because she really hasn't seen, you know, well, that one location she talks about probably was. But she's like, man, what the hell's going on down there? I said, hell, I don't know, but I've seen stuff that you would only think you would see in a movie. You know, I've seen some really crazy stuff. And so I just wish people would, in the paranormal, tread lightly when they're dealing with a human being. They don't stay there. They, you know, they do their thing and they go to the house. These people have to deal with whatever's there 24 hours a day. So, you know, you got to watch what you do. And I think, you know, another thing with the paranormal, a lot of these teams, they're isolated. They isolate themselves, you know, because they think they're better than everybody else. And they don't want to reach out to anybody that would probably have more knowledge. You know, if I have a demonic case, I don't usually undertake it myself and my team. I call some of my friends that are demonologists, priests. I bring in a whole arsenal of people that, and you know, they may be in Chicago or North Carolina, but they're constantly on the phone with me, and they're pulling strings with some of their contacts. You know, I bring a lot of people from across the country involved when I'm dealing with something.
We do, too. We believe in para unity.
Yeah.
Let me tell you a good one about a Ouija board case we had. We went into this house one time, and there had been a couple of teenage girls there, and they kept playing with the Ouija board. Well, the mother kept, in their kitchen, everybody kept hearing the ting, and sometimes it would, you know, be like fast, you know, like every few seconds you'd hear the cha-ching, and then sometimes it, you know, it'd go 10 minutes and you wouldn't hear it. Well, when we got to investigating, they had opened a portal, and when the cha-ching was happening, it was either somebody coming in or going out. So it was just like coming in and out in this one room where they had opened a portal. And so we ended up having to close it. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and with the paranormal field, and I'm sure both of you, because you've been doing it a while, have seen it. And that's one thing Jody and I talk about as well is women in the paranormal field. You know, there's three of you guys that are founder, co-founder, and other co-founder. You know, it's hard for a woman in anything, you know, and including in the paranormal field, because it's for the most part, it's a male-dominated kind of thing, even with television shows, you know. And
yeah.
you find it hard being, you know, a woman in this field. You know, and sometimes other teams or whoever might kind of look down on you. Do you all experience that?
Well, we're the kind of women we demand attention when we walk into the room. They know that we're just as capable as they are. And we've had guys on our team. The guys that we've got now, they don't run. But we've had guys that run, they scream like little girls. You know, so we really don't. We don't let those people talk down to us, and we don't let them look down to us. And we go to enough conventions that we know the big guys like Zach Bagans and, Bagans, however you want to pronounce his name. Big head now, but, you know, he's still a nice guy, but, you know, Aaron's a whole lot sweeter. But, you know, we know the bigger guys and stuff because we do go to the conventions with them. And so, you know, we don't let them talk down to us.
But there was one time at Waverly Hills, we had, I was only like 16 at the time, and we had only had the team like maybe 2 years or so, you know, something like that. And we wasn't very big into it yet. This was when it was still kind of like a hobby instead of like a lifestyle choice. So the security guard, he was leading the tour before we did the overnight thing, and he was talking about the floor that we were on had big blob or whatever he
black was it.
Yeah, and how it was supposed to be in the level and spirit, and nobody could ever make it down to the end of the hallway by themselves and all this stuff. music. So can I have a brave volunteer who can make it to the end of the hallway? So here, me and Mongo racing for the front, seeing who could get there first. So I get there first, and he looks down at me, and he's like, I'm not sure if you can handle it, little girl. And so I, you know.
He asked me if it was okay.
Yeah, and he asked Mom if it was okay, and his mom was like, you know, she can handle it better than anybody else in here, I'm sure. And so he was like, okay, you know, and he, I could hear him making snarl remarks about how nobody had ever made it to the end of the hallway. So I was determined. I didn't care what came out. You know, I was bitten to the end of that hallway. And so I start down that hallway, and I hear him, you know, running off the mouth. And then he just gets real quiet, and I'm like, okay, well, that's weird. And he was like, you all see that extra pair of legs with her, you know? And I start looking around trying to see what they're seeing. I don't see anything, though, from where I'm standing. So I kept walking. And then I saw something crawl out of the corner of my eye. And that's one thing I cannot see in the things that crawl. And so here I am, you know, I'm freaking out on the inside. But I'm like, you can't let it show. You know, you make it through the hallway. And so I keep walking. And then I saw this large black mass. And I was like, well, maybe that's my shadow. And so I take a step forward, and it doesn't move. So I take another step forward, and it doesn't move. And, I mean, it had just got silent. You could have heard a pin drop. And so I was like, okay, that's definitely not my shadow because it's not moving. So I start walking faster, trying to get to the big mass. Well, before I could reach it to actually, like, reach out and touch it, because I had my hands out, like, I was going to actually grab it to see what it was, you know. And before I could get there, it just dispersed back into the wall. I mean, just kind of floated into the wall. And so I stood there kind of confused and dazed, and there was the wall, you know. I had made it to the whole other side of the building, and he was like, stay there, don't move. And so his whole face turned white, and he was freaking out. He was like, I've never seen Big Black. That's my first time ever seeing it. He was like, I definitely wouldn't have walked toward it like you did.
But she didn't know what she was walking towards.
Jody, you still there?
Oh, yeah. I'm listening.
Yeah, Jody. Jody's a very aggressive woman in her own right when it comes to investigating. You know, she's seen the same thing where men cower and go the other way, and when they do that, she's going right at some of these things. So yeah. She knows what you're talking about.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, it's a known fact. If you even watch Ghost Hunters, Tap, those guys will scream and run before those girls do. When have you seen one of the girls run? You saw Brian run. You saw, you know, everybody else run, but you saw those girls run. Because women, when we get startled, we just stop. And some of us will go, and some of us will go, ah! But, you know, we don't run. We, you know, we stand there. That's like at the jailer's end. Adrian, she knows me, and if I go, ah! You know, there's something startled me. And so she comes running down through there to see what I saw. And I wasn't going to tell her, you know, what I saw, because I wanted her to speak for herself. And she shined the light in there, and she saw that big mannequin standing there with his hands out. I don't know if you've ever been to the Jailer's Inn or not. It's in Bardstown, Kentucky. And they've got, it's an actual jail cell, and it's got a mannequin in it in a jail costume, the stripes, the prisoner's costume. And he's standing there when you look in there with his arms out like he's going to get you. And they don't bother to tell you that it's down there. So when you go in the dark and that light flashes up on it, it looks like somebody's standing there. So when she came running to see what I was, you know, what had caused me to do that. And so when she stopped, and then she went, you hear her walking off on the voice recorder. And she said, Mom, if you don't quit doing that, she said, I'm not playing with you no more.
I was like 12. It wasn't funny at the time.
It's funny now.
It was not funny. I thought you really seen something. I didn't
see something.
Yeah.
But no, women in general, usually they don't run. Usually just the men that'll run. At the Tutwiler, our video guy was a guy. And there was three girls and one guy there at the Tutwiler. And when we saw the little girl, she stuck her head around the corner and went, when we saw her and we started running towards her, the guy with the video camera, you hear him on the video camera yelling, oh shit, going the other way.
Yeah. Yeah, one of these days I'm going to see, Jody's in St. Louis, Missouri, and I'm down here in Texas. One of these days, Jody, I'm going to get your butt down here, and we're going to go to South Texas and go to Yorktown Memorial Hospital, since I've been there twice. I want to see you down there in the basement with Mr. Nasty himself.
Mr. Nasty.
Yeah. That
yeah.
The
you know me, I was running. I grabbed the fucker by the balls, man, twist and pull. I don't fear this stuff. I mean, I look at it like this. If you are part of the knowing, you need to have confidence within yourself to be strong enough to put yourself in these situations. So if you're in a situation, deal with it the best you can, you know, and don't let fear take over, because when you let fear take over, you're giving them power. So don't fucking give them power.
Yep.
You know? If I saw a freaking, you know, saw if I saw something fly across the room, what would come out of my mouth is, it's fucking game on now, motherfucker, it's game over. You know what I mean? Like, don't freaking run. No. Tell them that's what you want. You know what I mean? That's what you want. Because that's what you do want. That's why you're there. For them to prove to you that they have powers and they can do things. Talk to you, show themselves, throw something. However, you know, they decide to communicate. You've got to be strong enough to deal with it. Otherwise, don't be doing this shit.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, out of curiosity, like, what is you guys' favorite piece of equipment? You know, do you have things that you guys like better over other things, or things that you guys may be doing different that really other people aren't doing?
Well, my favorite piece of equipment is just a good old standard voice recorder, because I'm head of EVP, so EVP is my thing. You give me a camera and I'm going to snap a couple pictures and then I'm going to lay the camera down, because I don't do well behind the camera. I like actually, you know, trying to talk to the spirit and hope to get something back, you know, when I'm listening back to voice recorder. But as for something that we have and that we do that most other teams don't do, we have the Ovilus One, the original Ovilus, and Patty Starr, out of Lexington, Kentucky, the lady that does Scarefest, when we first started our team, she was doing her first year of Scarefest. And she kind of helped, you know, alongside her get started on everything in the paranormal and stuff like that. And she helped us really get our team together. Well, where we had worked alongside her, we actually trained under her. That's who gave us our certification. And once we got pretty well established, we'd done the Bristol train station and stuff like that, she got to choose 10 people to test out the Ovilus. Yeah, 10 teams to test out the Ovilus One. And we were one of the 10 teams that she chose. So we had the first, one of the first 10 Ovilus. And then after those 10, then they made a different, like, upgraded Ovilus. And now they have, like, Ovilus 2 and other different names, but I think our Ovilus is probably where not many people have seen the one like we have. That's probably our best.
There's only 10 made like ours.
Yeah, there's only 10 made like ours. So I think that's one of the coolest things we have. You know, that's kind of like our prized piece of equipment.
Yeah.
besides, like,
the video camera.
I like the Sony infrared night shot, the super night shot. It's the one that they took off the market because people were putting filters on them and looking through people's clothes with them. So there was the one we have, you know, it's, I can't remember what number it is, but it's the one that they took off the market because of that, because of the people putting the filters on them. And it, that's like at the train station, we got in Bristol, we got like a ball of light coming out of the wall, and it comes over and it lands on the ground and it manifests into a woman. And I catch it all on the video, and she just walks away, and I don't know, I turn as she does, and I don't know, I didn't see her, but for some reason I just, that's the way I turned, and we caught her, you know, going, she took, what, about 10 steps where she disappeared, about 10 steps, and then, we caught a dog at Sedansville, Ohio, at the rectory with it. We've caught so much good stuff on that. As you can tell, I'm video specialist because that's my favorite. And then we've got our photo specialist here. His favorite, you know, you ask him, he would say photos. So it just depends on, you know, what you like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
What's Jenna? She's EVP, too. So we got two EVPs, one photo and one video sitting here. So.
Not a lot of teams use diving rods anymore, and we always bring our diving rods with us. So that's kind of one unusual thing that we use that some teams have kind of got out of.
Actually, we did at the Star Museum. They had us to do a session with nothing but diving rods. And, we got to set our cameras up and stuff. But they wanted us to teach the public that came, they paid to come to learn how to use the diving rods and stuff.
Oh, yeah. See, I got so many pieces of equipment, it's unreal. And so mine depend on, I always like the digital recorder, but mine depend on the location, what's working. Because sometimes when I fire up my SB7 spirit box, I mean, the thing just won't stop talking. And responding to my questions. Then there's other times when I fire up the Ovilus X, and I get some cool responses with that. So I guess it all depends on where I'm at. Sometimes I've had some really crazy experiences with the K2 meter. So, you know, it's, for me,
K2. We like our K2s really well, too.
I guess you really can't do without it. We couldn't do without any of our equipment because, like you said, it really does depend on what the spirit's using best to communicate.
Yeah, because there are locations I've been to where we turned on the spirit box and some of the members of the team that have extra abilities would pick up on the spirits not liking that thing being on. And,
right.
You know, and it'd get kind of quiet in the house and nothing would happen. And, you know, so we'd shut it off and then lo and behold, things happen, you know. And there's been times we've been at locations where we're setting up our DVR and we're picking up on the spirits are not liking us setting cameras up. So I would just announce to them, hey, I'm going to run this system for the first part of the investigation. After that, I'm going to turn it off and give your location back to you, and we'll investigate without it the second half. And for some reason, every time I shut that DVR off, things start happening. So, you know, I don't know if there's, you know, some kind of correlation with that or not. You know, probably I just need to do it more often. To see if that's the case every time I turn the camera off. But, you know, that's one thing some investigators don't realize is we're dealing with intelligence. You know, we're not, just because they're not in a physical body, does not mean they're not intelligent, you know? So especially if you're dealing with human spirits, because they know where a camera's at. They know what's going on. I mean, crap, they know who you are before you even walk in. Sometimes, though, even if you got abilities, whether it is you can dream things or you actually can see them or hear them, sometimes they'll visit your house before you even go to the location.
Right.
You know?
Have you ever used the ERA-Q?
What is that?
If somebody has shot themselves or whatever, then you bring, like on the voice recorder, you bring a gunshot and play it. And, you know, if you can't get them to be active, you play that. And where they shot themselves, you know, it should make them remember that. And sometimes they react.
Well, I've done it where one location, there was a they said it was an accident. They said it was a hunting accident. The guy was cleaning his rifle, and he shot himself and died in the house. Well, we uncovered through our psychics and through our EVPs and our ghost box and everything that it wasn't an accidental shooting. It was an actual murder that was covered up because it was a small town in Texas, and the murderer was an actual – it was late 1800s when this happened – And the murderer was a woman. She shot her boyfriend point blank in the face. So you can think about it. In a small town in Texas in the late 1800s, a woman shooting a man, she's going to be took to the middle of the town and hung in front of everybody. And but we uncovered all that. And one thing that I did is I bought a cap gun. And I shot that cap gun off. And, you know, in the room, in the spot where, you know, this happened. And we got some EVPs or some gunshots going off 5 or 10 minutes after I did it. So I stirred something up.
So it works for you too, so.
Yeah, and I got friends that build equipment, and they tell me how to build some stuff too. I'm not really tech savvy, but they know that, and they tell me how to do it in simple steps. But I've built little EM pumps that mounted onto props, like a gun or any of that kind of thing, so that this prop, this trigger object, actually has EMF coming off of it. So to try to trigger something, you know, like, you know, you see them all the time on television, like a teddy bear, and it's got the sensors in it that light up if they touch. Well, it's got an EM pump in it too. So we do that kind of thing. We'll reenact stuff, and sometimes it works, sometimes it don't. But I found out when dealing with the spirit world, they pick and choose who they want to talk to, just like they pick and choose what instrument they want to communicate with, because they feel they know what type of person you are, you know? Unfortunately, Jody, the asshole spirit that you deal with sometimes at some of these locations, they know who you are, and they know what you're going to do before you even do it. That's the beauty of it, and we found out if you're yourself, you're not coming in thinking you're God's gift to the paranormal, and you're an expert, because there's no experts in our field, and you're just yourself, you will get so much results, and you don't have to sit there and go, man, I wish something would happen to me. I've told that to so many new members that join the team. They get jealous because, you know, they're not experiencing anything. Nothing's happening where they're at, and part of the team's having some cool things happen. I tell them, look, don't wish that, because you're going to get what you ask for, and it's not going to be something subtle. You're going to get the living crap scared out of you if you don't stop, you know? And I said, just be patient.
Well,
you
are asking for it for the purpose of drawing it out to collect that evidence to back up the claim. Be prepared for the things that are coming to you. Like, you know, if you invite it, one of your team members could get scratched. You know, somebody could get pushed up against the wall. Somebody could get tripped. I mean, there's so many things that could go wrong.
Adrian has a scar still that happened about, how many years ago was that? About five years ago, she's got a scar from where she got scratched in a graveyard. And it scratched through her jacket. It was like in the wintertime. We have these big jackets. They're haunt. We got haunt on the back of them. And they're about, 3 inches thick? And it scratched her through her jacket. And she bled. There's no hole in or cut or anything in the jacket, and nor her shirt that was under it. But she was bleeding where it had scratched her. She said she felt something was burning, and when she took the jacket off, it was bleeding, and she's got a scar to this day from it.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen some crazy stuff on my journeys, and, you know, sometimes, like, you'll hear about a place and you kind of don't believe, like, that it's going to happen to your team. And then you go and, like, you know, things are happening. And, you know, to back up exactly, like, have you guys heard of Farrar Haunted School in Iowa?
No, I haven't.
It's a phenomenal school. You should look it up. Farrar Haunted School in Iowa. And it's got a history of the janitor molesting the children. And they're directly across the street from the school is the town cemetery. And so all the people, kids that went to school there, just people in the town, are buried over there. And oh, my God, like, you wouldn't think there's something there that seriously is, like, a little bit more, like, if it's human, it's a bad human. If it is demonic, it's like, borderline, I'm not sure, there for me.
What, malevolent, maybe?
Hmm?
Maybe a malevolent spirit instead of a demon?
I don't know, but there is something really bad there, and it drains people's energy. Crazy. Like, you could, that's one of the things, and I thought, oh, yeah, whatever. But it happened to 3 people on my team. Like, literally almost just fell and dropped.
Wow. What's the name of that school again?
Farrar. F-A-R-R-A-R. Haunted School. It's in Iowa.
I appreciate that. I'm going to look it up.
Yeah. It is phenomenal. I mean, if you guys ever travel around and you do this, and it's definitely one to put on your list of places to do and be blown away and happy. And the great thing is if you go, you can actually take blow-up mattresses and sleeping bags and pillows and actually sleep at the school in the gym and use the bathroom for the shower.
Awesome.
So I went, and I was there for a good 4 nights and 5 days. And, man, so much stuff happened. It was just like, it was on fire. People were getting hurt. People were having the craziest dreams, seeing shadow people, great EVPs, great ghost box sessions. So many people almost, you know, their energy drained and almost dropped into the ground. Very, very interesting place.
We would love to go there. Shannon just whispered that to me, when are we leaving? Lee used to be bad for that. When Adrian and Ashley were in school, they never knew where we were going when they came home on Thursday or Friday, because half the time I'd make them get full on Friday because we would be going. I'd get the doctor's excuse because I had a friend that was a doctor, and he'd give them the doctor's excuse for Friday, and we'd take off Thursday evening when they get off out of school, and we'd go out of town and, you know, go somewhere. I miss those days because we used to just do it like on the spur of the moment, you know. Now everybody has to work, and it's hard to do now. Now you have to plan.
Oh, yeah. That's why I want Jody to come with me down there to that hospital, because that place, it's the same kind of atmosphere, Jody. it can be dead. You can roll the dice. It could either be dead or it could be just every corner you go around, some crazy thing's happening, you know? And I love places like that.
Is it expensive to rent?
Huh?
Is it expensive to rent?
$500.
For the night?
Yeah.
What are the hours?
Huh?
What are the hours?
I believe we got in there at 7 that night, and you can stay all night. Yeah, it's worth it. It's really on it. There's a lot of spirits there. It just depends on which way you want to go with it, you know? Because if you stir up the mid-level demonic that's down in the basement, he's so powerful he can block out all the other spirits. And anytime you think you're talking to a spirit, you're talking to him. He'll shape-shift into different spirits. But if you don't concentrate so much on him, there's a lot of really nice and really cool spirits that'll do things for you. It just depends. Like I said, if you stir him up, then, you know, you're gonna it'll be a roller coaster ride. He can do a lot of stuff. He threw a chair from the balcony in the chapel down on the floor in front of us.
What's the name of that place?
Yorktown Memorial Hospital. It's down in South Texas. It's been on television. Zach and them went. That was the location where they had the donkey that scared the hell out of Zach in the beginning. Yeah, the donkey passed away since then. But yeah, that's the location that they went to. Of course, they got there. That's what I hate about, and I'm sure you guys see this too, when you go, and Jody knows this too because she's experienced it. You go to some of these locations, and then you hear about it, and you watch the, you know, TAPS or Ghost Adventures or whatever, go to that location and film, and either the stories that are being told to them or the experiences they have is completely different from what you heard and what you experienced at that location. Because, you know, in the case of Yorktown, I love that place. But the things that were said on the show were completely different from what was told to us.
Right.
And what we experienced. So it is what it is. It, you know, it's for television. I understand that. But it irritates me when I go to a place and then it's on television, just like a house that these owners have that open up to paranormal teams up in Arkansas. You know, it's highly haunted. There's no evil spirits there. There's no aggressive spirits. But the spirits there, they love to talk. We got 256 EVPs there. That's after we threw out 100 of them.
Wow.
And they wouldn't stop talking on the EVP recorder. You know, and the things that was told to us, and we love them to death. That's why I'm not saying where it's at or who it is, because I don't want to throw them under the bus. But, you know, things were said a little bit different when Taps was there, you know. And even Taps was like, well, I feel like there's an aggressive spirit up here in the attic. And I'm like, there ain't no – we've been there three times. There is no aggressive spirit. you know? Don't be saying that, you know? And they're just doing it for television.
Yeah, they do that a lot.
Yeah.
Now,
one thing I wanted to touch on, because I'm a huge history buff, history fan, and I know Jody is too. Are there places around you guys locally that, you know, you try to help out, try to, you know, because a lot of these places that are historical, they're trying to make ends meet, and a lot of times they let paranormal teams in and charge them, you know, in order to keep the electric on or try to restore places. And I get really frustrated when I see another historical place get bulldozed over, you know? So do you try to help out anything locally that, you know, struggles, you know, try to keep its doors open?
Yeah, we have one place which is right like five or 10 minutes from our house, the Star Museum. It's in the historic district of Abingdon. We've actually been working with him since about the middle of last summer. And he, when I first started talking to him about everything, you know, he was telling me how, it was a year before that when I first started talking to him, and he said times were rough and that he really didn't know how people would take, you know, doing paranormal investigations and stuff like that in his, in the museum. And he said if times kept getting rougher, that he would get a hold of us. Well, it took about a year for him to realize that, you know, he wasn't going to be able to do it on his own, and so we got involved. And he was looking for the store to actually close down before fall even was over. And it's still open to this day, and we do something twice a month at least. And it brings in quite a bit of attention and a lot of money, and we, you know, some of it goes to us to keep up, you know, restoration of the van and stuff like that, and all the rest of it goes to keeping the Star Museum open. So, and it's, I think, the second or third oldest building in the historic district for as far as the shopping places go, right in town. So, and then we also did that with the place in Bristol. It was an old house, and it was a gorgeous house. You could tell it was, you know, kind of like a dark brick and the gothic-looking kind of houses. And they were actually getting ready to tear it down because it had just been like an eyesore kind of to the community because nobody ever kept it up. And, of course, we didn't have the money then to buy a house and restore it and everything. But we did get a hold with a guy who could afford to do it, and we worked alongside him to he actually, you know, got the building back up to where we could actually let people come in. And then we did investigations to help him make his money back. And now that house that was, we do a haunted house during Halloween, you know, just for kicks. But we do the paranormal investigations year-round. And so both of those, you know, wouldn't be there today if they hadn't incorporated paranormal into it.
Yeah, that's a good thing. You know, I think it's something that a lot of paranormal teams, if they're not doing it, need to do, because there's a lot of great historic, just for the history itself. You know, that's one reason why I love doing investigations and going to these locations, because you get access to buildings that are not open to the public a lot of the times, and you get to experience history and, you know, see how they lived in that certain time period, and it's just so cool. And I hate to see buildings, you know, knocked down because of the fact that no one can keep it up, or, you know, or it gets condemned or whatever it might be.
Yeah, we're the same way. We hate to see old buildings, you know, get tore down. Like the Robert E. Lee Hotel, hated to see that go. There was a Robert E. Lee Hotel, and it'd been there as long as I could remember, and had been closed as long as I could remember. And they tore it down. So.
Yeah. I like
so sad.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I'm hoping they keep, the owners keep talking about it. They finally let Ghost Adventures in there as the first team to investigate it on a, you know, large scale. But we have a huge hotel. It's 14 stories tall, and it's on the other side of Dallas in Mineral Wells, Texas. The Baker Hotel, and, you know, presidents have stayed there, you know, Marilyn Monroe, you name it, have been there because, you know, back in those days they had the mineral water and the spa and all that, and it's a huge facility, and it's just been sitting there for a lot of years, and they were going to restore it and reopen it, and that kind of fell through, and so, you know, the owners let Ghost Adventures in there, and the rumor is around here with all the paranormal teams is they're talking about opening it up to paranormal teams to come in and investigate, which would be just phenomenal because of the history, and a lot of people have over the years broken into it per se and done some little freelancing, and some of the footage that's on YouTube is just crazy. You know, it's like teenagers going in there and they get the living hell scared out of them. And
awesome.
That's one place I want to get into so bad. You know, it's just crazy.
Well, all you can do is ask.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I had something else on my. I'm trying to think. So, what do you guys? Since we're kind of, you know, getting closer and closer to the end, what do you guys have on tap for this year?
Well, we had a couple of things in mind that we wanted to do. We know that we're doing Trans-Allegheny. It's already booked for June as far as big places that go. And we know we got to go back.
Hold up. Y'all suck. That's one of my bucket list places. I just wanted to interject that. Damn it.
We have had Jennifer's been twice and Shana's been once, and I've been outside of it, but I've never actually got to go in it. And so we're going in June to kind of do a team investigation of it. And we have to go back to Saddamsville Rectory. And we know that we're going to do something for Halloween at the Star Museum and, like, the MacArthurian and stuff like that. We know we're going to do something for them around Halloween. And then we're doing a prison in Ohio next month. Our Pat, with our sister team, she is a psychic medium, and they pull her in every year to do a seance. And so we are going to go with her to do an investigation while she does, like, the metaphysical side of things. We do the scientific side of things. That's really all we got with conventions. We do at least two conventions a month. Like, this weekend we're going to Nashville to the Tattoo Full Moon and Horror Festival. And, you know, we have all kinds of them lined up. Just this year alone, since January, I think we've been to 10 conventions now. Yeah. And this will make our 11th convention, and it's only April. So.
Wow. Well, that's cool. That's a good thing.
Yeah, when you go to the convention, you get to meet other teams, and you get to go on investigations with them. We've got, like, five, you know, teams that they're not really sister teams. We only have one actual sister team, but we have five other teams that invite us to go on stuff with them.
Yeah, like, there's this one team that we've been friends with since Scarefest first year in Lexington, Kentucky. And the historic Kentucky Theater, nobody had been able to get in besides that team. And so we became friends with them. And now every year when we go to Scarefest, we plan an extra day. Yeah, because we have to lead an investigation there. And then we get a private investigation for ourselves every year. And so, of course, this is like our seventh year, I think, that we've been doing investigations at the Historic Kentucky Theater. So when we go, you know, the spirits are pretty familiar with us and everything, and it seems to be more active when we come in, you know, and they say, hey, well, we remember you guys.
I climbed up the it had an old fireplace in it, and I climbed up in it. Because did like a gunshot, and it had never done that before, and it was right there at that thing, and I'm like, what is it, you know? And so I climbed up in there with my voice recorder and camera and stuff, you know, trying to figure out what it is. And I think one of the guys that works there, he told me some history, but I haven't researched it myself. This is hearsay, what he said. He said that somebody had gotten killed and they had threw them down in there and burned them trying to get rid of the body. So it was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. So you guys, what's your website and everything that people can look up your evidence, or if they want to talk to you or whatever it might be? What are y'all's website?
It's hauntparanormal.com. H-A-U-N-T paranormal.com. Haunt stands for Honey and Understanding National Terrors.
Wow. Yeah, and I also had read, this just popped in my head. You mentioned something in your bio about you try to help people with night terrors as well.
Yes, we have, Shannon is our dream specialist. So we have specialists on our teams that study one particular thing. And that way, if we are out on a case and we have that problem, then, you know, like being the founder, I'll go to them and say, you know, well, this is this and this. What do you think? You know, what could this be? And then I'll drag, like if it was somebody with night terrors, I'd drag Shannon in, you know, and let her do, you know, her investigate, you know, questioning and stuff like that before we do our investigation.
Yeah, that's a good thing, you know. I wish I'd have done that when I had everything. I was just kind of the do it all kind of thing, you know. But I talked to.
At all. And now we have 13 people.
Yeah.
At one time,
yeah.
We had 20 people.
Wow.
And we had 13 core and 13 auxiliary at one time. And it just got too much. So I said, we're doing away with auxiliary. So we, you know, we let them weed themselves out. They, you know, there's not that many people that are going to be dedicated enough to stick with a team like ours, because we have two mandatory meetings a month. We do something every weekend, and usually on Wednesdays or Mondays we have class where we, like with Shannon, she's head of dreams, she would teach, you know, something about dreams, and we have like three or four different people that, like mine is demonology, so I would teach, you know, about a particular demon or whatever, and then I do astrology, of course, and Shannon does parapsychology, and Adrian does ghosts and spirits and New Age, and, you know, we have 13 different things that we study on, cryptozoology, all different kinds of stuff, and we have class every week. Yeah, we have UFOlogy. So.
Nice. Yeah, you
and
know,
that way
and
everybody is involved, because if it's their turn to teach class, and, you know, when they come in, if they, you know, they don't have their class prepared, I'm going to be on their butt, you know. Because they only got to teach once a month, you know. They can do it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea, you know. Like I said, what's funny is majority, about 70% of my team decided to go on a different direction, per se, and, you know, they were clicked up to begin with, and now they're not doing too much. You know, they were going to do all this, that, and other, and they kind of died out because of the fact that they found out that old Kevo over here was holding the pieces together and doing the footwork for everything. So,
right.
But it's cool. You know, the ones I have left, we sat down and we're like, well, right now we're just going to keep what we got and we'll do some little ghost hunts here and there. And if a client calls, we'll take care of that. But, you know, we're not going to go to conventions. We're not going to do big locations. We're just going to kind of take it easy for a while. And, in the time being, we've been sitting down and jotting ideas, and I've already told them, I said, everybody's going to have specific areas that they're in charge of, because the days of me doing everything are over.
That's what we ended up having to do. There for a while, it was me and Adrian doing everything, and then I started having to do more conventions, and I was being in magazine articles and photographing for different magazines and stuff like that. So I was gone a lot, so it ended up a lot of it falling on Adrian. And so then we ended up, when we did our last sweep and got rid of our excess baggage, when we cut it down to 13, you know, we signed everybody, you know, okay, like angelology is for one of them, and, you know, you study angels and you're going to teach a class. You're going to have to be, you know, 15 to 30 minutes once a month. And, you know, and it better not be copy and pasted. You know, you better know what you're talking about when you teach this class. And so we have, you know, 13 people that are truly dedicated. They all hold full-time jobs, plus, you know, do our haunt thing. But we're like family. Like, I have a boat and a camper at the lake. When I go over there, guess what? Everybody goes over there. If we go to a convention, that's why we have to have the haunt van, because it hauls us all. And if we go to a convention, everybody that, you know, can get off work, they pile in the van and we go to the convention. So we do everything together. Like tonight, before we did this call, we did a birthday party.
Very nice.
Well, for Adrian, so... We, you know, you have to have that kind of unity or it's not going to work. If you have people that don't get along in the group, now when we take new people, we first have an initial meeting with them and then we decide if we like them or not. If we don't like them, then we don't see them again. The whole team has to vote, you know, you think this person, you know, might click with us. And if they do, yeah, if they get voted to the second night, then they go. We may go bowling, we may go karaoke, and we may have, you know, something here at the house or whatever, to see if they're going to be able to personality wise fit in with us. And we're goofballs when we're on the way to a location, we goof off and everything. But when you come out of there, you come out with, you know, with your investigating face on, and serious. And then when we leave during investigation, you better be serious. Now, when we leave the investigation, I don't care what you do, you know, because we've done what we came to do. But then, you know, after we do that second meeting, if they, you know, we vote, yes, we keep them, no, we don't. And then we take them on an investigation before we teach them anything. We want to see what they already know. And we want to make sure that want to run or, you know, whatever. We took this one girl one time. Man, she was crazy. She was sitting down the floor crying, and, yeah, she didn't make it. So, but anyway, well, you know, we do those three meetings. We have them three different times before we even start letting them be an investigator in training.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to make sure that they fit with your group.
Yeah. Cool.
You know,
well, I will.
If they don't fit in with you, they're not going to stay.
Right. Well, thanks.
And I don't think
we're about. Oh, Go ahead.
I don't like making it a habit to train somebody else's investigators.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we're down to the last few minutes of the show, so you guys throw out that website one more time.
It's hauntparanormal.com, HauntParanormal.com.
All right. Well, thanks, you guys, for coming on tonight, and I wish you, you know, the best and all the success in the world for your, for the rest of this year. So you guys keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks for having us on. We sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, not a problem.
Thanks, Cody.
So nice to meet you guys, and take care.
You guys still there?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you guys take care, and you guys have a great night.
You too, thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right.
All righty. There you have it, folks.
Huh?
There you have it.
There you have it.
We are at the
yeah.
end.
Next week, you remember the guest that we have, Joe Andre. He was a really cool guy that we had on the show, investigator. You remember his friend Kate? God, I don't know how to say her last name. Salvegi. Her and her husband are the upkeepers of the, oh, I don't even remember the name of the boat, up there in Maine, like the USS Maine or something like that, that the, you know, battleship that they have up there. She's going to be our guest on the show next Tuesday. We're going to talk all about that, and Joe's going to join her, and we're going to bring a lot of attention to what they're doing up there, and, you know, because they're you know, trying to make ends meet to keep the boat there and the dock we had talked about a little bit. So this is their opportunity for us to help them bring more awareness to what's going on over there.
Sounds great. I look forward to it.
And then the following week we're going to have the guest that you wanted to have on, an author. So look forward
who?
To talking to them. The guest that, I don't know, your guest that you wanted to have on. You said he was an author.
Oh, yeah. I need to do a thread for you. Thank you for reminding me of that. So that you can get a picture and a flyer or whatever.
Yeah,
good guy. He's an author, and he's got some very good stories you're going to like about his town. And, yeah, some really hardcore devil worshipping going on in his town. And
wow.
I encouraged him to, you know, incorporate it into a book that he's writing on now. So it's going to be really interesting to hear what is going on with his book, because, I mean, we talked about this, I want to say maybe 6-7 months ago that he started writing this book, so he's pretty good into it. So we'll see what he has to say, if he talks about it, like how in-depth, what he's learned. Interesting town he lives in. I'll save it all for the show. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and sign us out with a song, if that's cool.
Okay. All right, sounds good.
We're going to go with some pink for that ass, okay?
All righty. Good night.
Good night.
Never win first place. I don't support the team. I can't take direction and my socks are never clean. Teachers dated me. My parents